Welcome to Unsquish the Fish, the podcast where bloggers, writers, and Fins fans come to talk everything Miami Dolphins and bask in the glow of aqua and orange. And now, for the host of Unsquish the Fish, Ron Caniff. Fins up. Fins up. Fins up.
All right, Dolphins fans. Another episode of Unsquish the Fish, trying to get you away from the hustle of life for an hour plus or so. With me today, I have Efren Ramos, who is a contributor for Fin Maniacs. What's going on, Efren?
Good morning, Ron. Not too much. I'm up in New York, so I had to miss a scrimmage yesterday. Very unfortunate.
Yeah, you couldn't come down just for the scrimmage.
No, I mean, maybe a game, maybe a preseason game, not the scrimmage. Not a preseason game either. But
I assume at least you'll go to the Buffalo Bills Dolphins game up in Ralph Wilson Stadium? Is it still called that?
It's Ralph Wilson, and I go there every year. So I'll be there. It's been rough up there, but I'll be there.
When you say it's been rough, like, how do you mean?
The Dolphins don't do very well in Buffalo, pretty much historically.
When do we play them? That's going to be later in the season, obviously, because we play them
in November. It was in November. So, yeah, I was excited last year because it was in either the beginning of October or the end of September, but it was very early. I believe it was week two.
Yeah, but we still got rocked.
We still got rocked, and that was my bachelor party. I was six Dolphins fans deep, and we got it was rough.
I had to watch
Moreno get hurt too after he had that great game.
Man, that was the thing about Moreno too, is just you thought all the talk about him coming into camp last year that he was just overweight, fat. Mm-hmm. And the second he took the ball and started carrying it, you were like, whoa, I see this guy's got ability, but he just couldn't stay healthy. So bygones.
And I mean, that's been the case for a long time with Sean Moreno. I've had many fantasy headaches from him.
Oh, no, I've never actually owned him in fantasy. Never have.
It's awful.
I got burnt last year. I don't have to get off the subject, but I'm going to. Because I hadn't actually talked about this. I got burnt last year because I mean, on paper, man, you got to admit this. On paper, I had two 12-team leagues. 12-team now. Mm-hmm. And Monte Ball was easy going in the bottom of the first round. I'm drafting third in both of these 12-team leagues, so it's just weird coincidence. I go AP, right? I got Peterson third, mm-hmm. right, which is nice. I mean, maybe the best running back in the league. I got him at number three. I wrap all the way back around to the third from last pick, obviously, in the second round, and Monte Ball is still there. When he was going in the end of the first round. So I win AP and Monte Ball in both my leagues, dude. Had a horrible, horrible season, man. It just ruined my fantasy season last year with those picks. But they were, I mean, how could I not draft where I was drafted and those players there? Who wouldn't do that? I thought I had maybe two of the top five or ten backs in the league. And, could I get toasted? Oh, it's depressing. I've actually trimmed down some of my fantasy leagues this year. I don't have time to do as much.
I'm down to three, which is pretty rough. I think I got to pump the brakes on fantasy. I'm starting to get too consumed.
That's exactly. I've been consumed for a few years, but now I'm a lot more consumed with this podcast. So I was like,
this is more productive than that.
I suppose.
And you won't lose as much money.
I don't know. That's actually not true so far. You can ask my wife. She's the banker. She can tell you how much she probably has spent on this podcast, which isn't a small amount so far. But
well, Ron, every penny is well-deserved because I'm having a great time listening, and I'm sure everyone else is.
Oh, God, that's awesome. I appreciate that, man. All right, we'll come off the fantasy talk for a while. Maybe we'll revisit some Dolphins fantasy talk here a little bit in the show. Let's talk about the scrimmage, man. I got to admit, I was going on 2 hours sleep, honestly, because I have a weird retail wicked schedule. So I'd worked super late the night before. And then I had to work super early yesterday morning. So I was literally on 2 hours sleep. I worked and I drove straight from work straight to the scrimmage. And then I had to drive all the way back, which is a 3 hour drive for me. And I didn't get it back in until I had pretty much gone almost 24 hours without sleep. And I got home and I was still on such a high from the scrimmage that I still couldn't even fall asleep yet. I was just so pumped, man. And it wasn't because of performance. I was just so excited to see some, like, what looked like some actual football kind of sort of. Yeah. What are your takeaways from the scrimmage, from what you, I know you're in New York, so you can see it, from what you saw, from what you read?
Oh, I've read quite a bit on it. So, I mean, Ndamukong Suh is the big headline at the moment. And apparently the Dolphins didn't score while he was on the field, which is what I like to see. That's what he's there for. He's not going to dominate every game by himself, but he will make his presence known by himself in every single game, and you can count on it. So the fact that he starts from day one and does that in front of 16,000 fans, and I read last year that the scrimmage had 10,000, and this year it was 16,000. So you can just tell how excited people are.
And it was the stadium was a buzz, if you will.
Yeah.
to be totally cheesy. It was exciting, man. It was. And actually, what was actually more exciting about the scrimmage than a game, especially some of the games that I've gone to, a lot of the division games, it was all Dolphins fans, man. It wasn't like we're mixed in with a sea of 40% Pats fans, Jets, what have you. It was all Fins fans, 100%. And that, it was awesome, man. Everybody was excited. Everybody's watching it. And the cool part was you could kind of float around the stadium. I mean, everybody had tickets, and I'm sure people had the tickets that got them right at first were there at the 50-yard line. I didn't try and get down there. I never went down into the bleachers. I stayed along the top rail and watched some from the end zone. Then I watched some from about the 30-40.
Oh, that's awesome.
It was just perfect. I was trying to tweet out the pictures, but for some reason the pictures weren't coming out last night, so I might tweet. I'll tweet some of them out. I didn't take a ton, but it was awesome. You could see it. I could sit there anywhere. Really stand there. I didn't even sit one time. I was just standing the whole time.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd be too excited to sit down. I do want to ask you about something. Linebackers. Did you see anything interesting in the linebacker unit?
You know, I really didn't. The only time I really noticed the linebackers is when they were 5 yards behind the receiver that was crossing, and which was a play I saw them run a lot. They would clear guys out with some outs, with some post plays, and then they would have a receiver cut across the field, maybe 6-7 yards in front of the line of scrimmage. And they did that with all the units multiple times all night.
Yeah, that was a big Jarvis Landry route last year. That was a lot of that. They were doing a lot of that with him.
Yeah,
I'm not surprised to see that.
I saw him do it with Matthews. I saw him do it with Preston. I saw him do it with, I believe, Altman, who got in a lot last night and did quite a bit of interesting things. He actually kind of a little bit made a name for himself last night, Altman. But they were all doing that route, and I think that's something that looks like we'll probably use a lot this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know. It sounds a little concerning about the linebackers in coverage if they can't cover the middle like that. And we play a lot of teams that also do those. I mean, we're going to be facing Charles Clay up in the middle, Gronk in the middle. I hope they figure it out.
Yeah, I know. I didn't see any really impressive linebacker play or any plays by the linebacker. So I was like, ooh. But to get back to your point on Sue, man, just dominant when he was in there. And they didn't put him in there but for a few drives because he didn't need to be in there.
Mm-hmm.
But it wasn't just the pressure he would put on the quarterback. He was pushing in the face of the quarterback every time. Mm-hmm. But when they would try and run the ball and kind of run around him, he would just make the tackle every time. It was insane. You couldn't run on him. You couldn't throw on him. And it was just Sue. It was unreal. He was just disruptive every play.
There's a lot to be excited for. Jealous that you got to see it a little earlier than I did, but it's going to be exciting.
Yeah, man, I'm super pumped about it. Once Sue left, and if we could kind of move to this subject, once Sue left, though, I feel like the O-line still wasn't amazing, but they definitely started to settle in a little bit more. They couldn't stop Sue, though. They just, it was worse than in the practices. He was much more dominant than in the practice. I can't wait till an actual preseason game to see that. I'm looking forward to having that on our team. That's going to be awesome. But once Sue left, the O-line definitely started to settle in and started to get a little bit more comfortable. And they did some pretty good run blocking last night. You know, pass pro obviously is still a struggle. But they're looking pretty good on the run block, and even runs up the middle. I was able to see LaMichael James got a lot. I was more impressed, and I saw some other people tweet out that they thought LaMichael James had a bigger night. Well, he had the kickoff return for a touchdown to open the practice. Wow. It opened the practice with that. But
that's awesome.
Yeah, but beyond that. He did a lot of things, but I thought Damian Williams crushed it last night, and he was running and he was catching the ball. He catches the ball a lot more smoother than Miller does, even though I think Miller's the better running back.
Yeah.
Damian Williams is much better out of the backfield catching the passes.
Miller has had a few easy drops, like really easy passes dropped. And that's always concerned me a little bit. The type of runner he is, I'd like him to be a really good pass catcher. But Damian Williams, he has saved the Dolphins' butt several times with, you know, some big-time catches. And I don't know how good of a runner he is.
I thought he was good last night.
He's definitely good at catching the ball out of the backfield. The number two position, the fight for that, is going to be pretty good. I just don't know if Damian Williams is a good natural runner. You know, if Lamar Miller were ever to go down, how many snaps can you give Damian Williams, you know, and LaMichael James, and even Jay Ajayi? You know, that makes me a little nervous. If Lamar Miller were to get injured, are you happy with what the Dolphins have back there?
With what I've seen so far, but I'd like to see James and Williams in a game. Man, Ajayi is just a different story. I started talking about him in week one. Well, when I say week one, the first week I did this show, first show I recorded, I was big time on the Ajayi train. And man, it's just, I've been in a scrimmage and a practice. Both times I've seen him leave the field with an injury early. And I haven't really seen him do anything. And I haven't heard him, no one's written about him doing anything so far. It just seems like between some little nagging injuries and just being a rookie, he's struggling right now to adjust to the NFL. He really is, to adjust to the speed. He tries to bounce things on the outside, and that's not going to happen, especially with Sue. Sue's, no. He's not going to let you get around. That's the thing. He's too strong. He's too quick.
Well, from what I hear, he's not doing great against the second team either. So even when he's not against Sue, he's not flashing. And that really worries me.
I'm not worried about it, though, just from seeing Williams and James. I'm not concerned about it for the team. I'm concerned about it for him, and I'm disappointed that he's not starting to show. Again, it's still a little early, but he's not showing what we thought we might see from him. Especially when you know that running back position, that's a position you're supposed to be able to come in and play at a fairly high level pretty much early as a rookie.
Yes.
I mean, if any position's going to be, you're going to have success, and as a rookie, generally running back is the position of any others, but we're just not seeing it, man. But I'm not super worried about it for the team. I like Miller. He's a great a very good running back.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm really impressed with what I see with Williams and even LaMichael James.
Well, I hope you're right, because if Miller were to go down, it would be a big time load on those three running backs, and one of them has no experience. One of them I have not seen, you know, in one full season, I haven't seen him really show me that he's a good runner. And the other one is injury prone. So, I mean, if something were to happen to Miller, I'd be extremely nervous about the Dolphins. And these three, the three backs that we're just glossing over Gillis Lee as if he doesn't exist.
I'm sorry. That's how I feel about that. And he got in a little bit last night. And I think a lot of the reason he got in on it is because They sat Miller after our first couple drives, and it wasn't for injury reasons. They saw what they needed to see, and there was no point of risking him. And Ajayi got hurt early. So pretty much through all four teams, you had three backs. You had Gillislee, LaMike James, and Williams. So that's why Gillislee got in on there, and he had a few decent runs. But I mean, dude, he's nothing special, and he's not making this 53 this year. I'm sorry, I'm really surprised he's been hanging on this long.
Well, yep, he's had I believe two camps with the team so far, and just hasn't shown enough. I mean, last year we had to bring in Daniel Thomas. Ugh. You know, I'm like,
that's ridiculous.
I know, I can't believe he came back. But yeah, I'm just a little bit nervous. And I'm not saying that I want them to go out and find somebody. I just hope that Miller stays healthy.
Yeah,
he did last year, and pretty impressively too. He really stepped up after Knowshon went down. He took this team and kind of made it his, you know, as far as the running game.
No, definitely, for sure. And the big thing, I think, there's like 2 points I want to make on the whole Miller and his backups and his minions. Mm-hmm. Trying to figure out not just the 53, which I like that, you know, anyone of my listeners know I like having fun trying to do that way earlier than I probably should. But then you're trying to figure out who's active on game day and starting to see the special teams value of LaMichael James. You know Williams is going to be active. You know Miller is going to be active, and they're not going to activate four running backs. Nope. I'm starting to think that Ajayi will make this 53, but come game day, he will be inactive, at least at the beginning of the season. That's going to be my early prediction.
Yeah, and he's a good candidate, you know, for a player to bring along slowly. Let's not rush into Jay Ajayi. He has natural skill, and he has those bone-on-bone issues where they're rubbing together. They gave him a shelf life of, what, three or four years?
Yep, exactly.
So let's just chill on Ajayi, because I'm okay with letting him come along slowly, be it halfway through the year, be it next season. We have a talent on our roster, and at this point, there's no point in, you know, throwing him into the fire, especially when we got players who are a little more seasoned, who seem to be approaching that NFL relevance, you know.
And another thing too you got to consider is that LaMichael James is currently playing in his old Oregon offense.
Mm-hmm.
It is. That's what he's playing in. We run Chip Kelly's system, just not as fast. And it's what he ran mostly in Oregon. And LaMichael James says, this is what I ran in Oregon. This is the system I used to. This is how I kind of grew into football.
Yes, and, but I mean, getting on the field has been his issue, though.
But I don't. That's where I'm thinking, based off if he can be a special teams contributor, and he has to be a special teams contributor. So if he is taking the kickoffs, then he's on the field, and that means he'll be active. Williams active, Miller active, Ajayi not active. So I think that's how he gets on the field. Is mm-hmm. he has to pretty much not necessarily win the kickoff, but at least be splitting some time with Landry on that to where he shows that value. And I think that's how he gets on the field, in my opinion.
Well, you know, I honestly don't want Landry returning kicks anymore or punts. And there doesn't seem to be someone on the roster who really jumps out at you at excelling at that facet of the game. And if LaMichael James is doing it at a high level, throw him out there, activate him every game, because Landry's too important to put out there, and LaMichael James has the talent. So I think it's great that they have him. I think maybe special teams might revitalize his career.
Yeah, I think so. I'm interested to see how that goes. So then another thing I'd like to talk about with the running backs and Miller is obviously we've heard all offseason that he's been trying to gain weight, trying to get bigger. Mm-hmm. I never really knew whether that was something he was doing on his own, that was something that the Dolphins wanted him to do. I never heard this reported, that information given out by any of the beat writers, Sun Sentinel, Miami Herald. But interesting enough, so I'm listening to a podcast, CBS Sports Radio, a fantasy podcast.
Mm-hmm.
And one of their fantasy writers and one of the contributors on that show is Dave Richard. Dave Richard is a South Florida native, which I just kind of recently figured that out, and I'm gonna take a guess that he's probably a Fins fan. I don't know that to be for sure.
Yeah, he was at the camp recently, and he's brought that up multiple times on the podcast.
Yes, so you listen to that podcast as well. So yeah. I thought, so you may know what I'm getting ready to say. I thought it was interesting. I just heard this yesterday, and I wanted to bring it up, that he was the one that finally gave us some information on what's going on with Miller and why he was trying to gain the weight that literally at the end of the season or leading into the summer work or the spring work, that Lazor told him, you're going to be getting a heavy load, so mm-hmm. get your body ready.
Yeah.
And those were the words used. And I was like, well, finally, now it makes sense to me. I was like, what is he doing? Why is he trying to gain weight? I mean, I understood. I figured for the pounding, but I didn't realize that it was specifically for, we're going to feed you a lot. And then I want to piggyback into that. What mm-hmm. I saw last night in red zone work was a lot of quick tempo with the snaps. It seems like once they got into red zone, they started to really pick up the pace. Line up, snap it, line up, snap it. And I saw run, 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 run. They are going to run the crap out of the ball in the red zone this year. Yeah. That is their plan. That is how they're going to try and punch this thing in more often than throwing it. I'm only obviously basing this right now off of one scrim and a little bit of practice, mostly the scrim. Mm-hmm. But I mean, it makes it, but if you put all those things together, all the information we've collected so far, all of that kind of seems to fit the puzzle. It all seems to make sense to me. I mean, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I want to ask you, how did he look from what you saw? Did he look noticeably bigger, or did he just seem stronger?
I honestly can't, couldn't, from afar, I can't tell. I wasn't close enough to him to be able to tell that he looks bigger or not.
With the pads on and everything, you really can't see
much. No, I can't see 5, 6, 7 pounds.
Reportedly, it was 15 pounds, is what I heard.
It's been reported a few different things, but I think he, from what I understand and what I read, he bulked up a little bit more than where he's at now, and then he came back down a little. Okay. Trying to find where it is. And from what I understand right now, it's around 7 pounds more than he weighed last year, you know, playing weight last year.
Well, so in my opinion, I think it's great because he has speed, and I'm not sure that he would lose it with just gaining 6 or 7 pounds. So that won't get sacrificed. But what's most important is his health. And I think if he's stronger, he's going to have more of a chance. You know, this is his team now. He has the keys to the car. He needs to do whatever he can to be prepared for it. And he's going to take hits, and he has a target on his back. He came into the season last year as, you know, splitting carries with Knowshon, but everyone really knew that Knowshon was going to carry the load. It seems now that Lamar knows this is his team. He's bulking up. He wants to – he's been trying to be a between-the-tackles runner.
Yes. And
last year, he's gotten much better at it. I mean, his rookie season, I was really excited for him. I remember he had a good game against the Raiders, and I was really pumped. But I always thought he was a little too frail, too weak-looking. So anytime I can hear about the kind of player Lamar Miller is, I don't think he'll lose his speed. I think about that huge touchdown run that he had at the end of the year against the Jets. You know, he really – he had speed in that, but really the way he got it was just maneuvering through the pocket. It was kind of it wasn't that bounced outside run or anything. He worked to get through the line, past the linebackers, and then he flew. He was already by himself. So I'm not, because some people say if you're gaining weight, you know, that's sacrificing speed and agility. I think he has that instilled in him already. That's natural to him. I think the body type is not what he's working on, and it's going to be great to see a real three-down back there.
Yeah, he is a three-down back. I really wish that he caught the ball in the backfield as good as Williams, but you know, you gotta take what you got. He's a good running back. He rushed for, I like to say, 1,100 yards, 1099 if you want to be official. He rushed for 1,100 yards last year. He's had one of the highest yards per carry in the NFL. He's 3 years now he's in the league.
Mm-hmm.
But I just kind of want to cite all of our evidence. Let's put everything together and figure this out this year. I want to say that the Dolphins are a much, much more run-heavy team this year than people are thinking they're going to be. So we'll start with, they started to give Miller the ball more last year towards the end, and that started to pay off as far as how much work he was getting, and he started to show that he could handle it. So yeah. Lazor tells him, you're going to get the ball a ton this year. Get your body ready. Now, that's not quite the utterances of some of the other things we've heard around the league, like when someone told C.J. Spiller, you're going to get the ball till you throw up. And then that didn't end up being the case. And Andre Ellington, they were going to feed you till you pass out or whatever it was that we've heard. That was just basically saying, get your body ready. We're going to give you the ball a lot more. That's one. Number two, we know for a fact that this team is a better run-blocking team than they are pass pro. Bottom line, the line, I should say. The O-line is a better run-blocking O-line than they are a pass-protecting O-line, correct?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
We also know that they've been asking sometimes Tannehill to throw the ball, as far as attempts, up there with what some of the elite quarterbacks are having to throw the ball, which isn't necessarily, not saying I don't like Tannehill, I really like Tannehill, but I don't know if that's necessarily a recipe for success.
Well, when he's throwing the ball the way he does, those are very high percentage throws. I'm okay with him throwing the ball that many times because we've seen the way Tannehill throws, and it's kind of the dink and dunk, and he's not, and every once in a while he'll pop a long one, which we'll get to in a little bit in the scrimmage. I heard there were some long balls. But I think that the high passing rate is, you know, they always talk about wanting to play a lot of snaps in these kind of offenses. Get the ball, you know, get as many plays in as you can. And if we're doing that real West Coast dink and dunk, hitting people short, slip screens, you know, I think it's great.
They had a nice screen last night to Williams, and I it 100% fooled me. And I think it almost kind of paid in our favor because I'm so used to seeing snap and pressure in the quarterback's face. Well, this time it was like major pressure in the quarterback's face, and I believe, I can't remember who the quarterback was, whether it was MBT or Freeman. It might have been Freeman, but it was quarterback right in the pressure. I was like, oh, man, he's going to get clobbered. And then all of a sudden I realized, like, the whole line pressed in on him, and he just did a little dink to Williams. And it wasn't just a dump-off. It was an actual, you know, planned-out screenplay, and he went 15, you know, 18 yards for a touchdown. Damian Williams did.
That's awesome.
Once he caught the ball. But I was like, oh, that's nice to see, because we just don't do enough of screenplays, in my opinion. And especially with teams getting pressure so much, it seems like it would be the right move to make to do that. But you just put all this evidence together, and I feel like Dolphins fans, get ready. I believe we're going to run the ball a lot more this year, and I think we're going to run it successfully, in my opinion, which I'm fine for that. You got a defense like we have. Run the ball a little bit more, but I see Tannehill taking the next step, man. He just looks so much better. He looks like this is his team. He was definitely the leader on the field When the game started, and I tried to get a picture of it, but I couldn't get my camera out quick enough. He took his helmet off. He was on the end zone closer to where I was. He took his helmet off, and he was yelling at everybody, "Get over here, get over here!" And you know, he was giving a rah-rah speech with the entire, you know, 89 guys just surrounding him, getting everybody pumped, getting everybody motivated. And a lot of people might see, "Oh, that's for show," or "That's not really him." I don't know. In my mind, just seeing it live, it looked genuine. It looked organic. It didn't look like he was doing it just because he thought he had to do it. I really feel like he's becoming a leader of the team. But on the field, and I said this last show, if you took all four quarterbacks and took their numbers away and just watched them throw the ball, you can easily see who Tannehill is. Who is the best quarterback on the field is now quite easy to see, when it wasn't necessarily in years past. And it wasn't, the gap between him and Moore wasn't as far just from an eyeball test, not talking stats, but from an eyeball test, it wasn't as big a gap as it is this year. I mean, Tannehill's going to take a next step, man. I just feel like the NFL needs to get ready for Miami. I'm just saying, I know we got our problems. I know we got question marks. Tell me a team that does not have problems or question marks somewhere. Yeah. You know, they need to get ready, man. Between the defense, being able to run the ball, Tannehill taking the next step, good receivers, they need to get ready. We're going to be a good team this year, my opinion.
Yeah, I completely agree. The only thing in our way is the rest of the AFC, which, you know, there are some teams in the AFC that have gotten better, and this conference is pretty nasty.
I'm so sick of hearing about this conference being nasty. I got to be honest with you. I am, man. You know what? Okay, good for you, Buffalo. You got a good defense. You had a good defense last year. You know, wonderful for you. Who's your quarterback? You know, and you got a coach. Your coach doesn't know how to coach quarterbacks. You would think a team that already has a good defense and needs to really work on this quarterback position might go get a coach that could help you with that. I mean, you know, I like Rex Ryan, and he's fun to listen to. He's fun to watch, and he eats dog biscuits, and I'm happy for him. And I don't think eating dog biscuits is getting him. And I understand it's for charity, so I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. But, I mean, I just don't care. And I tell you what, I'm tired of hearing about the Jets. The Jets are not that good. Well, they win 2-3 games last year. Todd Bowles is not a proven coach. They've lost Richardson. Their secondary is older. I'm really scared of their secondary in 2009. I'm done, man. I'm so tired of hearing about that. This division is so amazing. And then what kills me, what makes me mad about it, is every week you keep on hearing, oh, the division's so amazing, but they don't even mention Miami.
Yeah.
Oh, you're talking, Buffalo and Jets, Buffalo and Jets, Buffalo and Jets. Whatever, man. Sorry, that's not directed towards you. It's just getting me riled up. I'm tired
of hearing
about it.
And you're in South Florida. Imagine what it's like in New York.
Oh, that's true. You know? Where you live. How close do you live to Buffalo? Are you in New York City, upstate New York? Where do you live?
I live in Rochester, New York, which is about 35-40 minutes away from the Ralph. So,
okay. So you're pretty much very close. You're in Buffalo territory.
Yeah, it's Bills territory up here. Absolutely. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Everyone's a Bills fan. But yeah, I mean, the thing with them is, you know, they have a great defense. I'm not sure how much it's improved from last year, because we still split with them. And you know what? I honestly wouldn't be mad if we split with the Bills. That's a great D. But the Jets, didn't Chad Henne beat Revis and Cromartie when he was with the Dolphins?
Yeah, I mean, Tannehill beat them before. Revis last year. I mean, Revis is not Revis of the Jets previously. And then they have Cromartie, and, you know, it's just whatever.
People are really excited about Revis and Cromartie, but hey, they've had that before, you know?
Yeah, exactly, and that's what I'm saying. It was good before, and, you know, Cromartie, and isn't he the guy, and not that this has anything to do with football, isn't he the guy that has, like, 14 kids in 17 states or something? That's that same guy, right?
Yeah, I think 14 kids with 9 baby mamas.
Yeah, exactly, in 24 states. Obviously, I know everybody's going to say, how can you have 14 kids in 17 states? That's a joke. So you know, I can do math. That's just sarcasm. But not that that has anything to do with football. I just want to dog on the team a little bit. I think that the hype on the Jets especially, way overhyped.
Because they also don't have a quarterback.
They don't have a quarterback. You know, and it's interesting. Now I'm gonna get real pumped up here, man. Now I'm gonna get mad. Me and Ryan Clark. No, this isn't happening anymore with Ryan Clark. You know, you played some decent ball back in Pittsburgh. Now you come to ESPN like you know everything. You spurned the Dolphins some years back.
I totally thought he was coming. I was
and used us for some contract. Used us for a bigger contract. Now you're going to go on ESPN and say, we don't have a quarterback. We don't have a quarterback that anybody needs to worry about. Man, I don't even. Mm. Yeah, no. Whatever. That guy don't know nothing. Whatever. He obviously doesn't. When I hear people say that, I know they shouldn't be talking about football. Sorry.
Hey, what are you watching? Because I'm watching a football game, and I can see things, and I know what's happening. But it seems like they're not watching these games, and they're just, you know.
He just gets on there and runs his big mouth. Because Skip Bayless likes him and thinks he's so good. Now he gets to be on First Take, and he gets to, you know, be on ESPN because Skip Bayless says so, I guess. Mm-hmm. Whatever. Sorry.
Can you imagine
I'm riled up this morning. I'm still like juiced up from last night's scrimmage or something. I'm ranting I'm sure way are. Too much, man. I'm taking away your time. I'm sorry.
Oh no, you're fine. You got football in your veins, man. I'm jealous. But you know what I was thinking about the Jets? I wanted to touch back on that. Vontae Davis and Sean Smith.
Mm-hmm.
Their success since they've left Miami, it's been a double-edged sword to me because I like them, and I'll probably always root for them just because they were Dolphins and they were young Dolphins.
Yeah, they were drafted together and whatnot. Yeah.
Yep, I was saying like in their second season that I think we already have the best duo of cornerbacks in the NFL when they were out there.
Mm-hmm.
And they were really holding things down. We won a lot of games that we probably shouldn't have because of them. So now – Revis and Cromartie, man, imagine if we had both of them back, if they came back to Miami. but yeah, man, it's kind of, I often wonder, like, because I don't know exactly what happened. I remember that Hard Knocks where Vontae got cut. And do you know why we cut him specifically?
Do I know why? No. Do I have my thoughts and, you know, my... here's number one. And this is... and I can... I have to say this is about a 99.9% fact. Jeff Ireland is a... he should be a businessman. Because he gets a high off winning deals. That's bottom line. He had an opportunity. Obviously, the Colts called them. That was said, you know, many times on the Hard Knocks. But when he saw an opportunity to trade a guy who he didn't, who he thought was good, but he thought we could live without for a second round pick, he didn't really, he was winning, he felt like he was winning that deal.
Yeah.
And so he took the deal because it was a deal to be won. That's the way he was. That's the way he operated. He was a really good negotiator with that. And that, like, I think, I know he works for the Saints now. And they got him in the wrong position, man. Let me tell you. He's what? College scouting or something?
Yeah.
Oh, God. He's a horrible, horrible talent evaluator. Horrible. He was much better at the negotiation table, at trying to win trades, at saying no to trades that would have been bad. He did well in that aspect. He was good on draft day, was manipulating trades, but then he wouldn't pick the right player. He took that third overall pick from the Raiders, and he stole it.
Yeah.
Look at the difference between that one and the one that when Atlanta traded with, I believe, Cleveland to go up and get Julio Jones.
Yes.
Just go look, and I believe they went up to four. Go look to see what they gave Cleveland, and then look see what Miami gave Oakland. They gave 1 second-round pick plus their first, which, again, the first is just a flop. You already had a first. You moved up to a higher first. In essence, they gave up a second-round pick when they already had another one. They pretty much gave it to them. He stole that from them. Amazing. And then guess what you should have done? You should have gone and taken the left tackle. You had it right there, primed to take, but instead he took Deion Jordan because he's a bad talent evaluator. He took a guy who was athletic, not a football player. That's the kind of things he does. So to get back to it, he thrives off winning the trade, winning the deal. That's number one, and he had a deal he felt like he could win. Number two, they wanted to play zone, and Sean Smith and Vontae Davis were both press corners. Very good press corners, but they didn't fit into the mold of what Kevin Coyle wanted. And that was another reason that they let Sean Smith go and they traded Vontae Davis. But if you look, I saw PFF had those two guys as two of the top five cornerbacks in the league.
Absolutely.
Sean Smith does not get takeaways, though. And I don't know how many takeaways he's gotten since he went to Kansas City. But he's not a big takeaway guy. Even Vontae Davis wasn't a big takeaway guy. And they want – that's what they're looking for. They're looking for guys to take away the ball. They're looking to play zone with smaller corners.
It's definitely a different cornerback room. We got little guys, and the Dolphins love their little corners.
They do, and it's not like they're trying to shy away from that, because they got Brent, who's a little guy, and they went out and drafted Bobby McCain, who had a hell of a night last night, by the way.
Yeah, I've been high on him since
hell
the
of
beginning.
A night. And they went out and got Bobby McCain, who's probably about as small as Brent Grimes.
Yeah.
And Bryce is probably going to play the outside for us, Bryce McCain, and he's a little undersized. Now, as you may know, you may have heard, I'm doing that podcast now called Next Fan Up.
Yeah.
And so we have this little private chat room we go back and forth on. So I asked the Steelers guy, I said, Bryce McCain, how do you feel about him playing on the boundary? I really thought he was a nickel cornerback. And he said, oh, he does good out there. He made plays last year for us on the boundary. Which I didn't know. I've been sold, and everybody could say, oh, hey, you're backtracking now, Ron. You're backtracking. I am backtracking. I'm taking it back. I'm not as uncomfortable with Bryce playing on the boundary as I was. Yes, it was one person's opinion, but I had no idea he had even played any boundary. So I'm feeling a little bit more comfortable with Bryce on the boundary now. But he's another guy that's undersized. They are looking. It's just they wanted a different look at cornerback. They want a different skill set. But they gave away two of the better cornerbacks in the league to get that. But in a way, our secondary has been one of the best. You know, even last year when our defense broke down, it wasn't secondary that broke down. You know what I mean? It was the running game that cost us, or stopping the run.
Yeah, and I mean, well, Jamar Taylor got picked on a little bit towards the end of the season after Courtland Finnegan went down. But then
he got hurt.
Yep, and he's also not huge. He's not a big guy. I think our biggest cornerback that will probably take into the season is Tony Lippett.
Lippett had some plays last night.
He did.
He had some nice breakups and stuff.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, Lippitt was on it.
Okay, because I haven't. He kind of, since OTAs, the Lippitt talk has kind of died down quite a bit.
Yeah, he didn't get a pick that I recall, but he had a couple breakups. All the cornerbacks, in my opinion, the best looking unit last night beyond the starting defensive line was the secondary. I mean, from the starters down into the third team guys, they made nice plays last night. They picked off balls. They swatted away balls that looked like, oh, that's going to be a completion. And they just made nice little, it's kind of weird with Lippitt and with Bobby McCain. They really look like they're feeding off of what they at least see. And maybe he's helping them a lot too, what they see Brent Grimes doing. Cause I watched the way he kind of hovers and then just tries to get his hand in there, and just swat it away, the way he just is able to stay with his man and knows right where to go and has that ability to just kind of get in there and swat it away real quick. I feel like I saw Bobby doing that, almost mirroring what Brent Grimes does, and even Lippitt doing it a little bit. But like you said, Lippitt's a bigger guy.
Yeah. So, I mean, I want to ask you something really quick. what would you like the cornerback depth chart to look like after Brent Grimes?
Oh, that's interesting that you asked. Now, okay, I did it again. This time I really don't have the 53 man in front of me that I wrote. Okay, let me did you say and you said
not depth. I'm just saying who do you want to see starting?
I still would rather see Jamar Taylor really take the boundary position and for himself.
Yeah.
But I don't know that he's doing that. So I'm okay with Bryce. I'm feeling a little better about Bryce McCain on the boundary. And then Jamar Taylor at the at the nickel.
I've heard he's been getting snaps at the nickel too in practice.
I'd love to see Will Davis come and do it, but he's been hurt. He hasn't really played. He's been struggling. I don't know, man. I don't know. When I wrote down the 53, I don't have him there, and I continue to say that may be happening, and some of it may just be because he can't play. He can't prove himself because of injury. I think Bauman he's steady. He's got some experience, but he's a big special teams contributor, so he stays.
Okay.
Lippitt stays, and Bobby McCain, for sure, is looking really good to be on this 53. So I think the six guys that we go into.
And I tend to agree. I watched Bobby McCain footage. I did a video breakdown of him, and I took a look at a lot of his plays, and he does. He's a ball hawk, man. Like, he wants to get his paws on the ball, like, every time. And he's also very physical. I've seen him hit people hard, And that's what I like to see, because I feel like Courtland Finnegan's gone. And I don't want to say that Brent Grimes is soft by any means, but the cornerbacks lack a meanness. Like, I want somebody that's fierce in there, a tough guy. And Bobby McCain kind of has that mean streak to him. So I think that he can make a leap. And I don't know if I trust Jamar Taylor in the, if he can't play the boundary, I don't know how well he's going to play the nickel, especially these days where there's some great, great receivers coming out of the nickel. He's going to have his hands full.
Yeah, he will have his hands full covering the slot for sure.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'd like to see maybe, but then there might be too many McCains on the field at the same time, but I'd like to see Bobby take that next step just because of the way he played. Because I think that his presence out in the secondary could be beneficial. I want him to scare some receivers, and I want them to think twice before going.
Yeah, I hope that happens. We're gonna find out, man. We're gonna see, huh? We haven't even played a preseason yet, so we might be all very premature on most of the things that we're guessing. At least I know
am. It's coming in 5 days.
Ah, thank goodness.
I'm pumped. It's time Chicago.
Time to see what this team can do a little bit against another team.
Yeah.
And I'm excited that we're doing those practices, joint practices against Carolina. It's almost like giving them a couple, like two extra preseason games, kind of see what they're going against another team.
Yeah.
From what I understand, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, yeah. No, I think it's very, that's like a sneaky way to really try out some, because are all the practices that are joint practices available to the media?
Yeah, the media, I think the media can be it. almost every practice, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, the media will be there. And that's it, those are open practices, so there'll be people watching just, you know, up in South Carolina.
Okay. Well, that's good. I think it's going to be exciting to test yourself against other competition. And it's a good way to, you know, these players that might not make the rosters, you're also auditioning for that other team too. And I just think it's great. I don't know if I don't think we've done it enough in the past few years, but it's really cool that they're going to get together and do it. I hope we get some really good camp reports from there. And I'm also, you know, let's see how Cam Newton does against the real D-line, because the one that they got over there in Carolina has taken some hits over the years. So he's going to get to, he's going to have to play in front of a couple of nasty guys. And Cam can use the work, I think.
Yeah.
His development's been a little slow, in my opinion.
I would say that I've heard from a few people that would probably know more than me that Carolina's O-line isn't a whole lot better than ours. So let's see if that, if our, considering that, let's see if Sue and those boys push around their O-line like he pushes around our O-line. I hope so. Or that may be very telling about our O-line. That's okay. That's the thing. When you start to play other teams, you're trying to figure out, well, are they doing this good because they're good, or are they doing this good because the other unit's bad?
Yeah.
You know, are we running the ball good because we're a good run-blocking team, or are we running the ball good because our linebackers just can't stop them, our D-line can't – you know, does Tannehill look good because he's just good, or does he look good because our secondary is softer than we think?
Yeah.
I'm not saying that any of these scenarios are true. You just really don't know what is true and what is not till you do it against other teams.
Absolutely. And you know what? I'm wondering if they scheduled this practice on purpose, because we play Washington Redskins week one. And by all accounts, it's going to be good to get a practice in against a quarterback that does that. Let's see how we play when the play breaks down and you got RG3 running up the side. So this is going to be good practice for the linebackers and the cornerbacks when they have to deal with RG3 come week one.
Well, that makes sense too. And you think about what Belichick did last year. He planned a practice or two with Philly because mm-hmm. he played us week one, and it was going to be the same. No, it didn't work. And it was going to be the same offense. So it's there may be something to that. And that's the first mm-hmm. Joint practice that the Dolphins have had, I don't know, in 10 years or something.
Yeah, and maybe it's because I'm thinking about the game too much since it's week one and there's so much time in between. But I begin to get a little nervous when I see what Washington's doing with their D-line and their linebacker unit. And, you know, there's always that mystique when you have a mobile quarterback. There's always that he can rip you apart, you know.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that they can really take care of that and make me not nervous for week one.
Here's the thing where I think that, yeah, you can always get nervous about a mobile quarterback, but here's where I think Jay Gruden, the coach of Redskins, part of why I think he sucks as a coach mm-hmm. personally, he doesn't know how to coach his talent. He is going to force and has been trying to force RG3 to be a pure pocket, stay in that pocket, and just run when, you know, like what Tannehill does. When the opportunity presents itself, he's going to take off, but he's always looking downfield. But that's just not RG3's – that's not what he's best at doing. No. But Jay Gruden doesn't want RG3 doing what he's best at doing. He wants RG3 doing what he's doing. And if he thinks that RG3 and that team – I'm sorry, I don't think Washington's that good a team, personally, in my opinion. No. If he thinks that they're going to beat us by him staying in the pocket with Sue in his face all day – I don't think that's going to happen. That's just my opinion, man.
You know, I think he realizes it, and I think that he's beginning to feel the heat on the seat there in Washington, and I think that he's going to let RG3 do a little bit more. This is kind of a make-or-break year for both of them, the coach and RG3. So I would not be surprised at all if they loosen the leash on RG3 and let him do kind of what he wanted to watch that year. And I was rooting for RG3. You know, I'd like to see it again, of course, not against us week one, but that team was extremely exciting to watch in that rookie year 2 years ago. It just feels like forever ago, doesn't it? When the Redskins, you know, were fighting for that playoff spot, and I think they did make the playoffs with RG3.
Yeah, they made the playoffs. I believe they lost to Seattle, and
that's when he got hurt.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. He, he tore his ACL or what have you. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to 100% respectfully disagree and say that Jay Gruden tries to tighten up the leash even more on RG3 and tries to force him inside the pocket even more because he really doesn't want RG3 as his quarterback. And that's the honest truth. But because he's really the most talented one right now in the field, he's going to try and make RG3 be a pocket passer, stay in the pocket, do what he wants him to do. And if he can't do it, he's going to put somebody else in there as quick as he possibly can. My opinion. Because I think that Jay Gruden is one of those guys that thinks that my system is the way to go. I don't need talent. My system's good. And if you can't do it in my system, you're not good enough for me. I'm going to bring somebody else who can. And there's many quarterback or coaches that are that way. Chip Kelly being the most obvious of that group. And I never like, I don't like coaches like that, honestly.
Well, the Chip Kelly thing is a little crazy. That's going overboard. You're treating your players like, you know, high school kids, not letting them do anything. And apparently he's monitoring the players at all times on what they're eating and where they, when they're leaving the club, like absolutely everything is that he's keeping track of. And I mean, I understand that there's a place for that, for, you know, monitoring your players and keeping them in line, but the way he's doing it, and he's burning a ton of bridges in the process.
I don't want to get back into a Chip Kelly discussion or anything, but I don't, you know, he's got a great system. I love his offense. We run it, but I just to bring it back to Washington, I'm just telling you this right now. We go and we lose to Washington, there's going to be Panic City. Because you start to look at the rest of our schedule and you think, we can't beat Washington? Man, we got problems. But I personally think we're going to kill Washington.
Well, Ron, the Patriots lost week one to the Dolphins, and then we saw what they did. They won the Super Bowl. I wouldn't be too worried, because week one is always a little bit of a we're still trying to figure things out as far as when the lights come on.
Yeah, but so, we're not the Patriots, man. Let's face that. I can at least admit that, as much as I hate them. We ain't the Patriots. You know what I mean? Yeah, the Patriots.
I'm glad. I don't want to be the Patriots.
I wouldn't mind having four Super Bowls, even though they're all tainted.
I'd rather have the two that we have untainted. So.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. I saw somebody posted something so cute. Patriots 16-0. Aw, isn't that sweet? Weren't you really 18-1, though? Just saying. Okay, I'm being stupid now. All right, man. Let's talk a little bit. This is something I don't think I've ever talked about, really. I wouldn't say ever, but let's talk a little bit about those kickers, man. When the kicking situation. Last night, they didn't miss a kick. It was pretty nice, but there's been struggles in camp for sure.
There have been. And, you know, if we don't end up signing, I think that they did bring in competition. Thanks. They brought in Andrew Franks. Cool. You know, it makes me nervous, because this is a team now that we got the playoffs in the crosshairs right now. That's kind of, it's playoff or bust. And if we lose multiple games based off Caleb Sturgis missing kicks, that's going to hurt. That's really going to hurt. And I'm just nervous. Maybe I'm the only one that's nervous about this, and people think that, I hope he has to put it together. This team has gone through way too much to lose games off kicks, and I'm nervous about it. I was thinking maybe we'd bring in a little bit more competition for him, but they made it easy by bringing, you know, a Division III kid undrafted. But, you know, 6 for 6 altogether yesterday is very, very encouraging. And you said Sturgis hit a 50-yarder?
A 51-yarder. Let's not shorten it now. I'm just kidding.
Oh, 51.
Yeah, he hit a 51-yarder.
That's good, you know.
Yeah, the kickers looked pretty good last night. Sturgis looked good last night. I'm trying to remember. Sturgis tried to make a tackle on somebody last night. Can't remember who it was.
He heard himself playing kickball. He doesn't need to go out there.
I'm trying to remember, but it was funny. It might have been the LaMichael. Yeah, I think it was the LaMichael James one. Like you saw LaMichael James coming right up the middle. You saw Sturgis try to, you know, just sit there and do that kicker thing where he's going to try and tackle him. He gets totally juked. But then somehow Sturgis, he didn't go down is what it was. A lot of times you'll see the kicker just go down and that's it. He stayed on his feet, so he got an angle on LaMichael James. He got an angle on him and he tried to tackle LaMichael James, which is like, get off me, son. It was hilarious. I wish somebody had it on film. It was funny, though. Actually, Sturgis showed a little speed, though, to catch back up. I was fairly impressed with that.
That's good.
But anyway, that has obviously nothing to do with the kicking. I just thought it was funny to mention that I just remembered it as you started to talk about them. One of the things I was thinking about are many teams right now have two kickers in camp. And mm-hmm. a lot of times these teams would be like kind of us when we brought in Sturgis and we had Carpenter. And you almost knew there was no way unless Sturgis totally stunk it up that they weren't going to cut Carpenter because they drafted Sturgis. So you kind of knew that was already written in stone. But many other teams are that way. So at the end of camp, many teams are going to be kicking, cutting kickers. And some of those kickers will be vets.
Yes.
In lieu of cheaper guys because of cap issues and whatnot, not just this year, but next year. I think if we wanted to pick up, I know right now there's almost nothing, but yes. by the end of camp, there'll be some options if we decide to go that way, which is part of the reason I'm not totally panicked. If we go into the season with Sturgis, I'm going to be not panicked, but a little nervous. I'm with you on that. I will be a little nervous if we go into the season with Sturgis. Not saying he's horrible, but he makes me a little queasy.
Sturgis, I was looking at Sturgis' numbers actually just yesterday, and he's automatic from short range. I think he went 12 for 12 last year in 30 to 40-yard kicks. What makes me nervous is he is one of the worst kickers in pretty much every other facet of the game, including kickoffs. He had the second worst kickoff average as far as where the ball is fielded. Nick Novak is the only one who's worse. And Nick Novak is a great field goal kicker, so that, you know, there's an excuse for that. I thought, hey man, maybe he does take that next step. The thing that's on Caleb Sturgis' side is youth and age. You know, he can develop, he can get better. So that's good. I just hope that we're seeing it. I hope that he comes out and kicks his butt off this year.
Yeah, because you're always going to, no matter how good you are or even how bad you are, you're going to have close games in the NFL where it comes down to kicking. I wish they would take kicking out of the game.
Yeah, completely.
Just take it out of the game. I just wish that they would just make it about touchdown. Obviously, that's not going to happen. My father told me this, and I don't know this to be 100% true because he's talking years and years and years and years ago. He said many years ago that touchdowns were 5 points and field goals were 4 or something. Like years ago. I have to see, I should have just looked that up. I just popped in my head. He told me this so long ago when I was little and I was like, really, Dad? I don't even know. Maybe he was messing with me. He told me this was like in the 40s or the 50s or something.
My father
is an older gentleman, so he used to watch the Packers back in the, you know, the 60s and things like that. He's been watching football on television when they first started putting football on television.
But yeah, I'm 28 and I lived in the Dominican Republic for a long time where there is no football. They don't even talk about it over there. So
no soccer, so right? You play soccer?
Baseball. Baseball is the listen, if you're a parent in the Dominican Republic and you got a son, there's probably a 90% chance that kid's going to be on a baseball team. Because every parent thinks that their kid's going to be the next Sammy Sosa, you know.
I got you.
I was force-fed that, and I ended up hating baseball because of it, which probably contributed to why I like football so much now. Because, I mean, it was very foreign to me. When I came to the States, it was extremely foreign to me. And I was like, wow, this is awesome. This isn't baseball. Baseball sucks. So.
How did you become a Dolphins fan? Did you live in South Florida or Florida at all for a while, or have you always just lived in DR and then New York?
I lived in West Palm Beach when I was a little kid in first grade, and my father was a Dolphins fan, and my whole family were Dolphins fans. So I didn't live there for very long, and I moved to the Dominican Republic after that, but I started watching football again, and it only made sense to, you know, I had a chance to pick a new team because I was gone from football for so long, and I went with the Finns, man. I had to go back. And the year that I really started getting back into football was the 1-15 season. And that's who I was rooting
That's
for.
Interesting. That's just probably a year a lot of people got out of football, who were Dolphins fans anyway.
That's the year that I got in. Greg Camarillo will always have a soft spot in my heart.
Me and a friend of mine, my friend Keith, he's been on the show multiple times. I remember we watched that game together, And man, me and him, he kept that on his DVR or what a TiVo at the time, whatever it was. He kept that play from Camarillo on there. And me and him, every now and then during that offseason into the next year, before the whole Wildcat stuff started, which that was a lot of fun. But
yeah,
we watched that thing over and over again. And a friend of ours, Jeff, who is a huge Patriots fan, one time he came over and he's like, "What are y'all watching? Is football on?" You know, and he's like, "No, we're just watching the the play where Camarillo caught the pass from what was it, Cleo Lemon?"
Yeah,
you know, we're time. I don't if you go back and watch it, and you got to pay attention closely. If you go back and watch it, remember Baltimore wasn't doing anything that year either. They were having an off year. I'm pretty sure that was even before Flacco, or I think it was. Absolutely. I think it might have been the year before they drafted Flacco.
Yeah, they Flacco and Henny were together.
At the celebration when Camarillo, you know, he takes off, and they're celebrating like they won the Super Bowl. Jason Taylor's celebrating, the you know, Cam Cameron celebrating. You see, one of the Dolphins fans jumps on the back of one of the Baltimore fans. Oh, no, the Baltimore players. I should say one of the Dolphins players jumps on the back of one of the Baltimore players for a second, and then he gets off. And as the Baltimore player's walking away and undoing his strap, he is laughing his butt off. The Baltimore player, I don't even know who it was, but you could see him laughing so hard as he was walking. And they only show it for like a quick second and a half, but if you go back on YouTube or something and watch it, watch real closely for that one Baltimore player. I think he's the one that might have gotten burnt or tried to catch up to Camarillo as he was running.
It was the only game I'd watch from that season.
Oh god, the rest of that season is just a blank. I remember definitely some games where it was literally Tom Brady and Randy Moss just toying with our secondary. They were so horrible that year. Oh, our secondary was the worst. I could barely tell you one player that played on our secondary that year, but they were really bad. Not as bad as Gabriel Wilson. Gabriel Wilson might have been the worst Dolphin player to ever. Worst free agent signing in the history of Miami, my opinion. But
yeah.
Anyway, man, let's have a little fun. You had brought up something about game day rituals.
I was wondering. I mean, I'll tell you a few about mine to get started, but, you know, season's approaching pretty fast, and you know, I just love waking up 10 a.m. on a Sunday, you know, and then just planning out my day. All right, where are we going for football, guys? And it's just so exciting, and I'm starting to get that feeling again. And I was wondering, what do you typically do for games? You know, where do you go, and do you watch it with the family? Do you go out to bars, you know, if it's an away game? If it's a home game, do you always go?
I usually go to maybe a game or two a year, so I don't always go. So mostly it depends on the first game of the season. I usually like to hit either Buffalo Wild Wings, although Buffalo Wild Wings is kind of anti-Miami, at least around where I live. It's like you go there and they got the Dolphins game on the smallest screen tucked in the corner that they can. I actually think last year I walked into Buffalo Wild Wings to watch football and actually left and went. So I've been going to Duffy's. And I like to usually start off the season. Well, actually, that wasn't the first game of the season last year, though. I take that back, because last year I went to the first game of the season, the Patriots game.
Okay, the Patriots game.
So it was the second game of the season against Buffalo. I'm pretty sure it was Buffalo or Kansas City. I thought it was Buffalo.
The second game of the city was Buffalo.
Yeah, okay. And I usually like to go to Duffy's and meet up with a few people, but recently, my wife has taken a little bit more of an interest, and my daughter is definitely loves the Dolphins, even though she couldn't tell you anything about it.
She can
tell you nothing. She's 11 years old, and she loves the Dolphins because her daddy loves the Dolphins, and she knows nothing about the team, nothing about football, and will barely sit there and watch a game, except when we went to Duffy, she did sit there and watch the whole thing, which was cool.
That's awesome.
Other times, I like to get together. I used to get together with my boy Keith all the time. We used to watch them all, but he moved to Tennessee now, so... Jerk. No, I'm just kidding. Yeah, he had to move there for work. So I usually just do different things, but it's more about, for me, just the feeling of waking up in the morning and it's like, oh, football is today.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're kind of bouncing back and forth, like I'm on my phone, on my app, you know, trying to figure out my lineup for fantasy.
Oh, yeah.
But then I'm watching the TV, listening to what they might be saying about the Dolphins, and then I'm reading some tweets and whatnot and trying to figure out, you know, who's starting, who's not for the Dolphins. You know, it's just a back-and-forth thing. I don't necessarily have a tradition, but my friend Keith, when we were together, he's really hilarious. He has this Dolphins helmet, and when we were on defense, he has to wear the helmet. And when we're on offense, he takes the helmet off. I swear to you. It's hilarious. All right, defense, put the helmet on. Like, literally, if we are on defense and get a turnover in the first, like, okay, we're on defense. Picked off. Okay, helmet's off. Fumble. Okay, put the helmet back on. It's absolutely hilarious. I doubt he does it now because he has to go into a bar to watch the games now. He doesn't watch them at home because he's in Tennessee. But that one's pretty hilarious.
I got a pair. I don't have any crazy rituals like that, but I do have a pair of Dolphins socks that they have a pretty decent record, and I'm going to try to wear them as much as I can. I live in upstate New York, 30 minutes away from Buffalo, so the one game I go to every year is Buffalo versus the Dolphins, and you know that's been rough the past few seasons, especially you know going to the Ralph and having to deal with all those people because I'm decked out you know from head to toe Dolphins gear. Yeah. I'm going to represent my team. My wife, on the other hand, she won't go to these games with me, and she says she'll go if she can wear Bills gear because she doesn't want to get messed with. And I said, then you're not going.
No, sorry, you're not going. That's just disrespectful.
Last year, week two, it was my bachelor party, actually, and we had 6 Dolphins fans, and that's the most I was ever able to gather to go to a game, you know, because usually I have 2 very close, well, 3 very close Dolphins fans, and I watch pretty much most of the games with them because it's really tough to get everyone together at the same time because they're not, you know, the only thing that they have in common is that they're Dolphins fans. Mm-hmm. But so I'm stuck a lot of times being in enemy territory in the bars, even when I go out to watch the games, you know, in the comfort of a bar, I still get messed with. It's pretty rough, but it the worst is the Ralph Wilson Stadium, especially the tailgating people out there. And it's the girls usually the ones that really drive me crazy because they know that you can't do anything about it. So, like, they'll walk by and just flip my hat off my head and say, Bills suck. I get empty cups of plastic cups thrown at me. And luckily, not luckily, but recently it's been losses up there in Buffalo. So they're a little bit nicer when the Bills win.
Oh, but, yeah, I bet they hate it when they really give it to you. You want to run when the Dolphins win. He's like, get out there, take cover. Put a Bills hat on and run.
I'm sure you remember the big Reggie Bush game where I think he had 2 touchdowns. Mm-hmm. And he was crazy. I think he was close to 200 yards even. He did the slide in the end zone on his butt after a touchdown in the snow. That was rough. I got a football thrown at my head, the back of my head. And I turned around.
That's crazy.
Yeah, there were way too many people to see who did it. And he just whipped it, man, right at me.
That's just wrong.
And I'm so happy, like I'm pumped up, but you can't really show it or else you're going to get it. You know what I mean?
I would probably get killed. I would literally get killed.
I have to contain my excitement until I get in the car. And it's a mad dash to the car because it's a sea of Bills fans. And they are brutal. Bills fans are exceptionally brutal.
Well, I have a few things to say about that. First, I have a question for you. The Dolphin socks, do you wash the socks? Or do you leave them unwashed, like, all season long or something?
I think you do it proactively.
I'm sorry, you cut out for a second. You cut out for a second. I didn't hear the answer.
My wife finds them and washes them for me. I don't do it proactively. I kind of just tuck them away wherever.
Okay. This is another thing I got to say. I'm going to catch it for this one. Sorry, I'm going to say it anyway. So you said something about it's mostly the girls in Buffalo that mess with you?
Yes. Right?
Yeah. I'm sure they've seen what the girls at the Dolphin Stadium look like. I'm just going to say that. So a bunch of ugly, nasty, toothless girls are messing with you about being Dolphins fans.
You're not far off.
Sorry. I hope I don't make a lot of people mad with that. If I make Bills fans mad, and I can't imagine there's any Bills fans listening to this.
Mm-hmm.
You'll get over that, won't you? They are a sensitive bunch. But here's another thing. You want to come and talk crap about you going to them and being a Dolphins fan? Come down here to a Dolphins game and see what it's like every time we play a division rival. It's like 60-40, man. And that is not an exaggeration. It's ridiculous. So a big giant middle finger to everybody that gets sensitive because you show up to the stadium representing the Dolphins. Sorry. You just get over that. You got to try and come down here and see what that's like. Imagine that during a Buffalo game it was 40% Dolphins fans, how you'd feel then.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's like I was surrounded by a sea of Patriots fans last year, but it's that way for at least most of the division games, even Buffalo, which is it's not as bad. But the Jets and the Pats, oh, man. Because half the people in South Florida are New York transplants, mm-hmm. and they're not going to just become Dolphins fans, most of them, all of a sudden, unless they've really been here most of their life. They don't, you know, but most of them come down here in their early 20s, and they're, you know, or older. And they like either the Giants or the, you know, the Bills yeah. or the Pats or the Jets. And I understand that. I don't envision people just switch their allegiance because they change cities. But I'm surprised that you catch it that hard, that people actually throw things at you and hit you in the head with it.
Absolutely. Every time. Luckily, I was in a suite 2 years ago, and that was nice. I didn't have to deal with that. But it was a bad loss.
Oh yeah, well, you got in a suite. How did you pull that one off?
Well, I got upgraded. Kinda, we ran into two friends, and two of their friends didn't show up. We scalped, we sold our tickets, and we got the suite with them. It was great.
That's cool.
Yeah,
that's cool. It was all Dolphins fans
in the suite. No, but it was a mix. There were a lot of people that were from Europe who were there to watch their first football game. And that was really cool because I got to sit with people who knew not much about the game, but were extremely like infatuated. They were like, oh, this is so awesome. Like, this place is great. And the Bill Stadium is always rocking, man. Like, it gets loud. It's different teams. No. There's seldom you'll see like speckles of one or two non-Bills jerseys. And especially last year, it was rocking. I mean, last year we got caught by surprise, man. That stadium was nuts. That was the week that the Pagulas bought the team. They found out they weren't moving. Mm-hmm. Jim Kelly was cancer-free.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I knew going into that game, I said, there is way too much emotion on the Bills mm-hmm. side. It was going to be tough for us to win. Now, we played ugly anyway, and we lost a lot of it on special teams, honestly. Mm-hmm. And I'm not just talking about kicking. I'm talking about just poor special teams play, which is why I'm just preaching the whole bottom of our roster is going to be all about special teams this year.
Yeah, that CJ Spiller run.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, man. That there was so much emotion from the Bills and the fans and the team going into that game. It was, I won't say it's an unfair advantage, but it was definitely an advantage for them, man. Definitely an advantage. That was tough. All right, man. Why don't you tell us a little bit about, I know that you do some writing, who you write for, and give us all your contact information, Twitter, and all that good stuff.
All right. My social security number is 598. No, I'm just kidding.
I was just like, is he really going to say it? What is going on here? Okay.
No, I'm a writer for Fin Maniacs who, we recently got a new owner and we've been cranking it up. Make sure you check the site and on Twitter at Efren Ramos, EFRAINRAMOS. I also am the co-founder of HoopTrends.com if you ever want to catch up on some NBA news, but it's really slow these days.
Yeah, and you guys are doing a pod for HoopTrends, right?
Yeah, we also have the Flagrant 2 podcast. I am the host of that one along with my other co-founder, Nick, and I'd like to have you on there pretty.
Oh, yeah, because I'd love to go on there, man, because I'm going to sit there and tell you go, gosh, South Florida's going to kill me for this one. I'm going to get to tell you why I think LeBron is better than Jordan.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, oh, boy. It won't be the love fest this is. Sorry, guys. I have some very, very interesting opinions on basketball and yeah. that differ a lot from takes. Football. Yeah, but I'd love to come on and talk some basketball when the moment is right. Yeah, I just probably lost half my listeners with that one because they all hate LeBron.
Oh, man, this is great. This is a lot of fun.
All right, man. And you said Fin Manius has a new owner. Who is that?
It's Lewis. Matt stepped down. Matt has, you know, his family life and stuff, and I think he just didn't have time to do it. And now Lewis is running the site. He's doing a great job, if you ask me. Lewis has been on the show before, right?
He's been on twice. I was actually at the scrimmage last night with him.
Awesome. Yep, and he's running it, and he's doing a great job. I want to thank him for giving me the opportunity to, contribute more. I have been writing a lot for them recently, and it's really exciting. I'm just fired up for this season, man. I can't wait to get it started.
Yeah, I'm ready. I think we're going to have a good season. I'm, you know, obviously we're nervous about a couple of things, but I think this team is ready to make a playoff run, to get into the playoffs, and not just get into the playoffs, but when you got a defense like we have, mm-hmm. you know, that can bring you far into the playoffs. Because we can, I don't feel there's an offense out there that will just slaughter us. I mean, we showed that last year, really. Mm-hmm. And our defense wasn't as good when we went and played Green Bay, for instance. Yeah. You know, after the game was over, and you know, we barely lost that game. The guys from Green Bay were coming up to our defensive players like, man, you guys are good. We couldn't hardly do nothing. They were really impressed with our defense, and our defense is going to be even better this year because we've shored up some of the things, especially with the run defense. Yeah, it's going to be awesome, man. All right, I'm going to wrap up the show here. Obviously, you can find me on Twitter at UnsquishTheFish.
Whoa,
what's going on? Is a race? You got a racetrack in your house there, man?
All right, hot rod or something that just flew by.
No, that's cool. All right. You can find me on Twitter at UnsquishTheFish. That's really the best place to stay in contact with me because I'm on Twitter nonstop. And last night, I don't know if you saw Ramos, but I was like tweeting up a storm during the scrimmage trying to give as accurate of updates as I could anyway. If you'd like to email the show, not very many people do, but if you'd like to email the show, if you go to unsquishthefish@gmail.com, you can send me an email if you'd like. I am now currently the Dolphins representative on the podcast Next Fan Up, hosted and produced by at the real Pod Vader. Pod Vader, formerly at ESPN, currently with Blog Talk Radio. All right, everybody, fins up and have an awesome day.